Support comes from Empower Missouri's Affordable Housing Coalition, working to address the causes of housing insecurity and homelessness through tenant advocacy. Information at empowermissouri.org/housing.
Missouri State Senator Brian Williams has been in office for a little more than a year, and the University City Democrat is hard at work at criminal justice issues and piecing together Missouri's state budget. On the latest episode of Politically Speaking, Williams joins me to talk about what he's supporting during the 2020 session and some of the things he'll be standing up against. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, the definitive show about Missouri politics.
It's a little complicated in Bolivar because there is a Parsons family there.
But we also knew that it was important to make sure that we got to where we needed to go.
You know, if you walk in a room and you're getting ready to make a decision, and everybody in the room looks like you, you need to stop.
And right now what happens in the United States Senate is as critical as anywhere else in the country.
I really want the state to succeed.
We want everybody to know that we're all working together.
I just worked hard to try to build my name where I didn't have the money.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, St. Louis Public Radio political correspondent Jason Rosenbaum. And joining me as my special guest today, the senator from Missouri's beautiful 14th district,
Brian Williams.
Thank you very much for coming back on the show. First time as an actual senator. The last time you were on the show, you were senator-elect, and we're only talking about like what you wanted to do. Now you've been in the arena for almost a year and a half. I'll start off with a real softball. How's it been so far?
It's been an excellent job. I mean, serving the Missouri Senate is a really cool job. The only thing I didn't really expect coming into this role is that we work really, really late.
Oh, you didn't know that?
I didn't think we would be there as late as we are as often.
Boy, you were in for a rude awakening, because when I was covering the Missouri Senate in 2007, I actually went through a filibuster that started at 7 p.m. and didn't wrap up until 7 a.m. the next morning, which I think has actually kind of happened almost.
So I've experienced a filibuster that long, and it was a culture shock because we had our first filibuster probably within the first month of last session.
Before we talk about stuff that you may filibuster, we're going to talk about in the second half of the show, I want to talk about some of the things that you're involved with this session. I understand from talking with you before the show, you've just been appointed to the Senate Appropriations Committee, which is, I would say, one of the most important committees in the Senate because it involves writing the budget. Why did you want to join that committee, and what are you hoping to accomplish?
Well, it's a very powerful committee, as you know, Jason, and to serve on it, it allows me to, one, be a member of the minority party and actually have a significant level of power when it comes to how we appropriate money in the state of Missouri. But then also it allows me to be a champion for the St. Louis region in terms of getting money to our region for various programs, funding for institutions, and really be able to enhance the quality of life for people that live in the St. Louis region. So I think it's a great opportunity.
You're entering that committee, I think, through the budget process. The budget process started weeks, if not months ago. How are you getting up to speed of what is almost certainly for anybody a really daunting process?
It's a lot of work, and it's a lot to learn. And I sit back and I spend a lot of time meeting with the directors, going through their budgets offline, a lot of reading, not that we didn't do that already in the Senate, but just reading through the budget, learning, looking at last fiscal year on the way the money was appropriated, talking to the budget chair all the time about just the process. I think Dan Hageman, who's the appropriations chair, and Lincoln Huff have done a great job bringing my office as well as myself up to speed.
Is there any particular segment of the budget that you really want to make sure you put your stamp on in the next few weeks?
I think it's more or less making the case for some things, and one of those primary things would be Medicaid expansion. Mm-hmm. We need to make sure it's clear that Medicaid expansion will be a tremendous asset from a fiscal standpoint in the state of Missouri, and it can really help us be able to bring in federal funds that can allow us to spend money in other places.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because one of the things I've been asking people, both Republicans and Democrats on the show, since there is a ballot item that would expand Medicaid under the auspices of the Affordable Care Act that I think will almost certainly be on the ballot in 2020, Has there been any discussion among Republicans about passing Medicaid expansion this year to get ahead of it and be able to, like, put the Republican stamp on Medicaid expansion, so to speak?
Well, it's an election year, so I think that it's the conversation around it is probably focused more on talking points and not necessarily the facts behind it. So I think this is just another example on why we're probably going to have to put this before the people and not really put it on the, I guess, the sophistication of the legislature.
Well, let's talk about a couple of bills that you have sponsored. The first one I want to talk about is an effort to potentially lower the cost to petition for expungement and also allow for someone to petition for expungement sooner, especially if they have felonies. I want you to explain what's in your bill before we talk about the reasons for it.
Yeah, so last session, we passed an expungement bill out of the Missouri Senate. And I think it's important that we kind of stay on top of this while the legislature has an appetite for criminal justice reform. Because, you know, years ago, that was almost impossible. So now that Republicans are in support of criminal justice reform, we're looking at this as an opportunity to kind of strike the iron while it's hot. So the current law basically says that if someone has been removed from supervised release for 7 years and they have a nonviolent offense, they can be eligible for an expungement in the state of Missouri. We're looking with my bill is to cut that down to 3 years, lower that petition filing fee from $200 to $100. And I think that maximizes the opportunity for low-income and unemployed folks to be able to come up with the resources. And then I think it also cuts down that time period where, as we know, there are instances where folks make mistakes. And I don't think that 7 years of their life should be defined by a potential mistake that most likely they made at a younger or circumstantial point of their life.
You mentioned the Republican embrace of quote-unquote criminal justice reform. One of the things I've noticed from some Republicans this year is actually kind of a shift from that to law and order, let's get tough on criminals, that sort of thing. Do you feel like maybe Republicans are losing their zest for overhauling the criminal justice system and are moving maybe back to more like stiffening penalties on things?
I think it's a combination of things, Jason. I think, one, there's a disconnect between what the root causes of crime, in particular things like gun violence and things that happen in urban areas, versus the fact that we should be working in terms of creating relationships with law enforcement. And I think that they think putting people away for the rest of their lives and understanding that there are root causes that cause decisions and crime are mutually exclusive, and they're not. So, you know, law enforcement and taking policies that are decreasing crime at the expense of taking preventative steps, like providing opportunities for jobs, creating opportunities for folks to get a quality education. Those things can coexist. But just locking people up because they made a bad decision or because there's high crime areas, assuming if we put everyone in prison, that's going to make a difference, is the wrong way to look at it.
There has been legislation that would allow police officers to send certain cases to the attorney general as opposed to certain prosecutors. And that seems to be aimed at people like Circuit Attorney Kim Gardner and St. Louis County Executive Wesley Bell, who have run on a quote-unquote criminal justice reform agenda. I'm sure that you're aware of this. And what is going to be your posture if those types of bills come up in the Missouri Senate?
I think that the circuit attorney and the St. Louis County prosecutor have a job, and I think it's no place for the legislature to intervene on that. I think they have a job for a reason, and they've been assigned a role, and that's to handle prosecution in crimes and cases that come within their jurisdiction, and I don't think that we should step into that lane.
So from that answer, you're probably a big no on that type of issue.
I'm a big no on that type of issue, and I support... You know, and I support local control. I think that the circuit attorney should handle cases that fall within her scope, as well as the St. Louis County Prosecutor.
Another bill that you have sponsored is legislation that would add sexual orientation and gender identity to state anti-discrimination laws, particularly the Missouri Human Rights Act. This is known as MONA,
yes.
And this has been proposed for well over 20 years by a host of bipartisan legislators. It hasn't just been Democrats. There's been some Republicans. Obviously, the issue of discrimination against LGBTQ people has become a huge issue in St. Louis County with the Wildhaber verdict and then Wildhaber settlement. Is there any connection between you pushing for this and what's happened in St. Louis County, since you represent a big part of St. Louis County?
Well, I represent, yeah, a large chunk of St. Louis County, and there is a nexus between what happened in St. Louis County and filing this bill. But there's also a nexus with the fact that I'm the only black man in the Missouri Senate, and I don't want to be discriminated against either. So, you know, what happened in St. Louis County, in my opinion, was wrong. I don't think that anyone should be discriminated against regardless of their sexual identity or gender identity. That's something I personally believe. I filed this bill to, one, make a case to other parts of the state and counties and cities that there are folks in the legislature that don't think it's okay, and it should not be a law that should discriminate against anyone. And hopefully that sets the tone for local government to really take leadership and really cut down on the way their respective governments or businesses or corporations are treating folks that may fall within the scope of this bill.
There are two reasons why I think there's opposition to MONA. One is that people just are religiously against the concept of being gay or being lesbian or being transgender or bisexual. The other is that by adding sexual orientation and gender identity to the human rights statutes, it could open up businesses to more lawsuits. I'm sure that you've heard combination of both of those from your Republican colleagues. Am I right about that's what the opposition is, or am I missing the boat a little bit?
Well, some of it's opposition to that, and some is just flat out discriminatory. And to go even further, some of it is just flat out racist. That's it. But if you look from a fiscal standpoint, I guarantee you, you can sit down and talk to leaders throughout this region and state, and I guarantee you, Missouri has missed out on so many opportunities to draw resources here and opportunities to generate revenue because of the laws that we have in the state. And I think discriminating against folks because of their gender, their race, or sexual identity is the primary reason for that.
I just got to ask, like, why do you feel like opposition to MONA has a nexus with racism?
Because of the fact that it discriminates against a population of people. And we don't live in a country, in my opinion, that should discriminate against someone regardless of how they identify themselves. They have that right. And I don't think government should be intervening on that. I think that everyone should have the freedom to express themselves however they choose to. And the Constitution is only appropriate when it's convenient. So if we live in a country that says that everyone should have the right to be safe and express themselves freely, then we should pass this bill in the legislature, and we should not have discrimination going on in St. Louis County or anywhere else.
What do you think the prospects are for MONA this year? As I mentioned before, it's been introduced for many, many years with varying levels of success. It actually passed out of the Senate once, but didn't pass out of the House. It's passed out of House committees before, but didn't get a vote on the House floor. What do you think that the prospects are for this legislation?
Well, I'll tell you this. I spend a lot of time walking the halls of the legislature. So right now I'm informing and educating my colleagues and beyond on what this bill means and how important it is to pass it. And it's not going to infringe on anyone's religious beliefs or anyone's, in the terms that certain folks like to use, freedoms. I think that this could both coexist with religion and everything else that's important to folks.
We'll be right back after this quick break with Senator Brian Williams.
The Gateway brings you the day's news from the St. Louis region and across Missouri. It also includes stories from the Illinois side of the river and our Metro East reporter, Will Bauer.
in Alton, in Belleville, in East St. Louis, in Edwardsville, in Cahokia Heights. At Scott Air Force Base, I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
Listen to reports from Will and all of our journalists weekdays on The Gateway, on the STLPR app, and wherever you get podcasts.
And we're back with State Senator Brian Williams, a Democrat from University City. I want to talk about some issues that you're definitely not supporting and may be involved in all-night filibusters we talked about at the beginning of the show. The first is an issue that came up pretty recently, involves something called recovery charter schools. I want you to explain what a recovery charter school is and why you decided to come out against legislation setting them up in Kansas City.
Absolutely. So the beauty of the Missouri Senate is that we could take the time to walk through bills. I don't think anyone knew what this program was. Now, clearly, after many hours on the floor, we kind of know what this bill is about. And what we gathered was this is a bill that would really target a population of students that are have been in situations where they may have abused drugs or may have certain addictions to drugs and or alcohol. And it would pretty much take students from all over the state, and they would be able to go to a institution in Kansas City, which, as we know, there's money that goes to school districts per student that would no longer be available to those school districts if there was a student that decided to go to this particular school. Mm-hmm. So for me, I represent a district that has a significant number of public school districts. I went to Hazelwood School District, and I'm a proud product of public schools. I don't think that we should be defunding public education at the expense of schools like this one. Now, if there's private money and alternatives to get funding for students to attend a program or a school like this, then that's a different conversation. But we should not be defunding public schools in return to go to a charter-like or charter-similar school.
Is your biggest opposition to the fact that this wouldn't be like a traditional public school within the Kansas City school system, that it's a charter school and it would have a different governance than the Kansas City school district, basically?
Absolutely. There's been proven models that charter schools have not done nearly as well as public schools, and they tend to fail consistently. And I don't think that the state should be investing in programs like that until they have a model that they can show that they work. I think we need to be investing in our public schools and figuring out how do we make those schools and districts better, and then ultimately see where we go from there. But right now, I think the public school system has too many challenges to be taking money away from it. And I don't think charter schools are a good alternative.
You know, taking the lens back a little bit, there has been efforts in the legislature for a few years to expand the ability for charter schools to go into certain places, especially St. Louis County. And let's be honest with ourselves. If St. Louis County allowed for charter schools, like more broadly than they do now, they wouldn't be setting up charter schools in Maplewood, Richmond Heights, where I live, because nobody would go to those charter schools. It's going to be targeted at your district and a lot of school districts that are not doing as well as mine in Maplewood, Richmond Heights. What's going to be your posture when those pieces of legislation come up? May not happen this year, but it may happen in the next couple of years. And you're going to hear arguments that, well, we need to set up more charter schools in Normandy, Riverview Gardens, University City, maybe even Hazelwood, because students need an alternative to what's there.
Think about it. Maplewood, Richmond Heights. That used to be a school district that had several challenges. Now it's considered one of the best school districts in the state.
Yeah, because I moved there. It's all because of
exactly.
me.
Exactly. So since you've moved there, if we have more people moving to these communities and investing in these school districts, then they'll do better. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly the argument that I make about this particular bill. Let's invest in what we have and figure out how to make it better and not take away from it and take a chance on something that's proven to fail.
What is the status of the recovery charter school bill we talked about? What's the future of that legislation?
Well, the interesting thing about this is that charter schools create strange bedfellows in the Senate. So it's not a partisan deal. You have Republicans and Democrats that have issues with charter schools and have districts where public schools are considered the keystone to their region. I think it comes up again, just like anything else. In the Senate, nothing's ever dead. So I think it comes back up, but I'll be prepared to stand however long I need to ensure that this bill doesn't go into law.
Another slate of issues that may be coming your way involve guns and gun restrictions. Before the show, you were talking about some bills that were filed that would, I guess, make it easier to carry guns on college campuses, and also ones that would, I guess, nullify federal laws that restrict guns. I want to make sure I'm getting the subject matter correctly about the bills that you are clearly not a fan of. So.
Yeah, you did. And I serve on the Public Safety Committee in the Missouri Senate. So all of the gun bills come through that committee. And I've made it very clear in committee, and I will on the floor if they ever get there. We should not be promoting guns on public campuses or within schools or public transportation. That just doesn't, I don't think that's common sense gun laws, and I think it's bad policies for the state. I think right now, any bill that comes across my desk that's in support of expanding access to guns and not controlling who has access to them, I'm going to be strongly opposed to. And those are two bad bills.
You know, we talked about kind of strange bedfellows, about how maybe some Republicans would join with Democrats about opposing charter schools. But it seems like in Missouri, the public sentiment for like really stringent regulations on guns is not as strong, simply because the rural parts of the state have a long tradition with guns and using them responsibly, and there's a whole cultural aspect around them. Are you finding that some of your Republican colleagues may be more inclined to support the bills that you're going to oppose because many of their constituents see gun restrictions as a bad thing?
Believe it or not, I think that there's a general consensus of folks who do not agree with there being guns on the streets and being in the hands of people who don't understand how to properly use them. I think we need to be promoting gun safety. And I have a high regard for the Second Amendment. I don't think that we should be taking guns from law-abiding citizens, but also don't think that law-abiding citizens should want to have guns that exceed the fire capacity of law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And I definitely don't think that we should be putting our state in a position where folks who have mental health disorders, folks who have history of domestic violence, having access to guns. And if we don't tighten up and put laws and policies in place to address that population of people, then we're going to continue to have some of the crazy cases we have.
So let's talk about the upcoming 2020 election cycle for a bit. Let me just get this right out of the gate. There's been rumors for a long time that you have been interested in running for St. Louis County Executive. I'm going to just ask you directly, are you thinking of running for St. Louis County Executive?
Well, I'll tell you this. When I ran for state senate, it was a job I was excited to run for. I let all the candidates and clearly the public know that that was my intention. I have not done that for county executive, and if anything was to ever change, that would be the first thing I do, notify the public as well as the candidates. So as of today, I'm proud to be serving in the Missouri Senate.
Well, that is a very important race, not only politically, but for citizens of St. Louis County, just because the St. Louis County Executive's Office is so powerful and so meaningful to St. Louis County residents. And right now, barring anybody else getting in the race, whether you or anybody else, it's three relatively similar candidates: Sam Page, who's the county executive, Jake Zimmerman, who's the county assessor, and Mark Montavani, who almost won the Democratic primary in 2018. Like, they're three well-established, fairly wealthy white males. And I hate to just pigeonhole this question because you're an African-American, but given that you represent, I think, one of the largest African-American communities in the entire state, mm-hmm. How do any of these three people appeal to this voting base that could determine who the next county executive is?
I think they have to do like any other candidate that's serious about the office that they're running for, and that's put together a plan to justify why voters should support them, and place a record of service of things that they've done, whether it's professionally or in elected office, on how they're going to be inclusive to people of color, how they're going to work on policies that doesn't make certain populations and demographics of people not feel like they're worthy of their vote. And I haven't seen any of their plans yet, but hopefully whoever that's serious, if not all three, propose a plan to show why people I represent should vote for them.
Well, when I look at the map that Wesley Bell used to win his prosecutor race, I saw him winning huge margins in North St. Louis County, which is predominantly African-American, and also pretty big margins where I live in Richmond Heights, Maplewood, Brentwood, the central corridor, so to speak. And I think whichever candidate is able to piece together that coalition will be the next St. Louis County executive. Do you agree with me on that, or you think it's a little bit more broad than that?
I think you're spot on. I mean, I have a district that has some of the wealthiest communities in the region, like Clayton and Ladue, University City. And then I also represent communities like Ferguson and Hazelwood and Florissant. And that's a wide scope of voters. And I understood exactly what I needed to do to earn their vote. And that's how I got to the state Senate. So that's going to be a recipe that I think the three candidates or possibly more would have to figure out if they want to be successful.
Let's shift the lens back a little bit to an election that's actually going to be pretty close. It's going to be closer, which is the presidential primary, which is actually like 2 or 3 weeks away at this point. You haven't endorsed anybody yet, right?
I have.
Who?
The Democratic nominee.
Oh, there you go. Who do you think will have an upper hand in the St. Louis region? I know Michael Bloomberg is spending a ton of money on ads and also staffing up in the St. Louis area. But I got to just be very candid with you. His record with black voters and with rural voters because of his gun control advocacy is really questionable. And I think that any of the remaining candidates definitely have a big opportunity to get that voting swath, which I think will be important in the Democratic primary. How do you think that stacks up?
Well, I think right now there's a lot of challenges for various candidates in the Democratic primary. And for me, because I have a district that's far from monolithic, I'm sitting back and I'm listening to the folks that I serve. And hopefully that gives me a better understanding on who they feel would be best to represent them as the commander-in-chief. But I can tell you one thing, and one person I will not be supporting. And
Donald Trump.
And that's the current president right now.
That's breaking news. I'm really shocked to hear that.
So, you know, if anybody's, you know, breaking news, I'm not supporting the current president.
So the reason I'm asking about the presidential race is the presidential race will have such a big impact on down ballot contests for like the governor's race between Nicole Galloway and Mike Parson, all the other down ballot statewide races, Jill Shoup versus Ann Wagner. And I think if you pick the wrong Democratic nominee who cannot appeal to the Democratic base and also independent voters, and you have another scenario like 2016 where the Democratic presidential candidate is losing by 19 points here, no Democrat's going to win statewide. So what do you think Democrats have to do to prepare for this upcoming election cycle?
I think the same thing that every candidate that runs statewide, you have to energize the party first, and then you have to reach voters where they are and give them a reason to turn out in high numbers on election day. I think that there's a population of voters who are looking to figure out which candidate speaks to their interests. I think that statewide candidates have to be thoughtful and considerate of that. Like I said, I think my district is a model for the state. And if you ever want to have a good opportunity or understanding on how you should campaign, come to the 14th district, because we have wealthy folks, more poverty-stricken folks, folks of various races and backgrounds. I even have Republicans that are in my district in the northern part, in Bridgeton and some parts of Overland and things like that. So they're going to have to figure out how to place a case on why the demographic of voters should support them, and will be, that's to be determined.
How do you think the aforementioned Galloway Parson race stacks up? I mean, I've been saying this for months, if not years. The Democratic nominee for governor cannot win if they do not piece together big turnout in St. Louis County, and Kansas City, winning some of the more conservative suburbs and holding down margins in rural areas. I've done the math. You can't win without all three as a Democrat. Do you think Galloway has what it takes to piece together that coalition to upend Parson?
I think Nicole Galloway, one, brings something unique to the table. You know, and I'm not just saying that because I personally know her, but I think she's willing to do whatever she has to do and whatever she can to meet people where they are. And I think that's going to serve to an advantage. If you look at last election cycle, she ran in a wave. She somehow overcame that when Senator Claire McCaskill lost.
Yeah.
She won in areas that Claire didn't.
Against a really weak opponent who didn't spend a lot of money.
But I think once you get to that part of the ballot, Jason, I don't think people are really even doing the research. I think they're voting along party lines. Mm-hmm. So there were some folks who were very intentional that may have voted for Josh Hawley, but they decided to vote for Nicole Galloway.
What are some other races? We talked about the big ticket races, county executive, governor, president. I know you told me before the show you're not going to get involved in a lot of Democratic primaries, which is probably a good move. I've seen people who have done that who have been burned before. What are going to be some general election races that you're going to be watching besides the ones we mentioned?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be out and about for Deb Lavender. I think that's a race to watch for Senate District 15. I think another race to watch is down in South County with Doug Beck, who will be replacing Senator Scott Sifton. And then I think another race, I think those are probably the two primary races that I'll be watching and seeing what we need to do to ensure that we maintain or flip those seats.
Well, Senator, thank you so much for coming in today. We'll have to have you back in less than a year and a half. We try to get the St. Louis senators on every year. For all of our stories, stlpublicradio.org. Can follow me on Twitter at Jay Rosenbaum. How can people follow you on Twitter or any other parts of the World Wide Web?
On Twitter, I'm Brian Williams, M-O. Clearly, I'm on Facebook. And you can also find me on Instagram at B_Williams, M-O. And if you're not following Jason Rosenbaum on Instagram, please follow him because he is doing some exceptional work as an adjunct professor at Washington University.
I am. And my Instagram is Jason Rosenbaum. It's really easy to find. So long.
Smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.